You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. And in studio with me now is Sharmila Kamat. And you're very welcome to the programme. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Greg.
It's good to have you with us. You are part of the Indian community in Letterkenny, and we're speaking ahead of Social Inclusion Week 2023, which runs from this Saturday until Saturday the 1st of April. And an exciting, diverse array of events are planned, Sharmila.
That's correct, yeah. So we are, the Donegal County Council is launching this event on Saturday, and the Indian Community Centre is hosting it. And because of that, we wanted to celebrate it, make it like a holy event, which is, holy is a festival of colors, which we celebrate in India. It's like the beginning of spring. It's a bigger, just spray of colors. That's what we are trying to show. So the Social Inclusion Week is all about creating a fair and inclusive society, and that it is about ensuring that everyone has an opportunity to be part of this community, wherever they are, I mean, to be together in Letterkenny. So anyway, it's about celebrating our culture and making everybody else part of it. Mm-hmm. It's just about fun and come and join us. We've been here for so long, and we want all the Irish people who have been so good to us, welcoming their warmth. We want them to come and see what this festival is about.
You talked about where we want to get to, in other words, yes, a fully inclusive society.
That's correct.
How far on that road in our part of the world here do you think we are?
Well, we are getting there slowly, because you see now the kids who go to school, they have people from different nationalities, different parts of the world coming to Letterkenny. So I think we need to understand each other's culture. Because this is what it's all about, you know, because we need to understand what their food habits are, what their festivals are, what kind of clothes they wear. So if we make each other aware of each, I think that'll be a better society.
But I think it's also, it's learning, isn't
it? It's learning.
The more you know about other parts of the world, the other cultures, other races, the more rounded a person you become. Isn't that the whole argument with travel, that you travel to broaden your horizons?
Absolutely, I agree. It's all about celebrating diversity, inclusion, integration. It's all, you know, I think we've been here for a long time, and now we have got people from more different parts of the world coming to Letterkenny. Like, the show that we are going to have on 25th, it's going to be just a launch, and it's going to be a colourful event. It's for families to come and enjoy. Hopefully the weather will be good, and we're going to have this throwing of colours outside. It'll be good. But I would encourage everybody to come. It'll be Indian music. There'll be Indian dance there. We want people to join in and just be part of this fun, you know.
And we're going to talk about the positives of Social Inclusion Week, but I just want to touch on a couple of issues with you. Like, do you understand or sympathise with people that fear that Ireland is changing, that Irish people are being displaced by people from other parts of the world, that Ireland should be for the Irish? Like, when you hear or read comments like that, what is it, what emotion do you feel? Now, you're here a long time and settled and raising families, and maybe it's water off a duck's back to you, right?
Yeah.
But when you, do you understand their fears? Do you think they can be reasoned with? And maybe attending some of these events might help. But I just want to know what someone like you feels.
Yeah, I think personally, I have had no issues being here.
Of course,
I understand. You know, I've had very good experience. I've got very good friends. I've never had, but I understand where they're coming from and the fear, not being sure. But I think it's about educating each other. You know, I think we need to understand that this is not what they are all about. They are not here to just take from you guys. They're here to give as well. You know, they want to be part of the whole society. And that, I mean, everybody has a place. We have a thing to play on the, a role to play on this planet. And I think it would be nice to have people from different backgrounds to be together, you know, and that only will work when you get to know somebody. Like my kids, when they were small, when they went to school, they were the only Indian kids
in
the whole school.
Very tough for them as well.
Yeah, it was tough for them because, but at the same time, they were telling people, they were all the other students were excited about, you know, why were they wearing these colorful clothes, what kind of food they were.
We see,
you know,
if we put in a 4 year olds, a group of 4 year olds from all different backgrounds in the creche.
Yeah.
They will all play with each other.
Absolutely.
They might even, in innocence, ask, why are you different to me?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But there's something happens from that point of innocence in our lives.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. Is it who puts it in our minds or what have you? That then we start to see differences.
Yeah.
We start to be suspicious. We start to be fearful.
Yeah.
It's societal. It's not nature. It's nurture. Because nature has all of these children seeing each other as equal and innocent curiosities about each other.
True. And you see, the children don't see color, like, you know, that other person is colored or anything like that. They just play. They don't even need language to talk to each other. Like, even if they speak different languages, they still play together.
They can communicate.
Yeah.
They're my blocks.
So that's important, I think. And that's why I said, when children are, if they become part of this event right from when they were kids, I wouldn't say tolerant, but they understand, oh, she comes from India, that person comes from Bangladesh or Afghanistan, Iran. Mm-hmm. We have so many people from different cultures who are going to be performing on that last day.
And we're going to talk about that. And I want to ask one more question, because by coincidence, yesterday there was a set of figures released that shows that the instances of race crimes, race-related crimes, has increased. Now, you've said this is not something that you've experienced and you've got your friends group and what have you, but I'm sure you do hear of. Yes. Now, what I want to know, us as a society, right, can we continue to move forward? Sometimes I think we're stalling or going back in terms of living together, integration, inclusion. I'm just very curious as to where you see, and it's not just Ireland, everything that's happening here is happening in America, in France, in Germany, in Sweden, in England, in Scotland. It's, you know what I mean? Yeah, we think we're individual, but we're not. Yeah. Right. So in terms of us improving relations and inclusion and all of that buzzwords, you know yourself, can we continue to progress, or do you feel we're going through a period of stagnation, or indeed people starting to get abused that they never got in the past?
Look, there is two, three different parts of different kinds of people are there. You know, there's good people and bad people, but I think there is more good than bad. So these instances happen everywhere. Like it happens in India, within North India, South India. We have differences, but I think we need to coexist. We need to be, this is a fraction, a small thing happen, it's like blown up, and it's like, but it happens everywhere.
It is so true, because, you know, I've spoken to members of the African community who've come in the past, and they have this, they encounter people that believe that everyone from Africa is just from one country.
Absolutely.
And yet there's, you know, so many different idiosyncrasies and rivalries and disagreements and cultural clashes within countries, let alone within a continent. So anyway, right, okay, listen, I just wanted to put those to you while because I learned by, you know, asking questions I would ask if we weren't on the radio. Right, so then, the week. Talk to me now about the week. That's what we'll focus on completely. So whatever you want to get across now, Sharmila, it's all up to you.
It's the first day is the day that we are involved.
25th.
And the 25th. Okay, so the 25th is the launch ceremony. So we're going to have some speeches from the council, Donegal County Council. And then we might have just tea, coffee, and we have put a group together to have some dances. Some of the Indian women have decided to do a group dance, which will be fun, and we want people to join in. Hopefully the weather is good and we can do all this outside the Greenham Theatre, and it'll be brilliant. I encourage everybody to bring their grandkids, kids, everybody should come and enjoy this, because there's going to be color supplied by the council and they'll be thrown on each other. Well, they won't.
So in other words, what we're saying here is there may be some color around the place. So
absolutely,
wear clothes on Saturday from 1:30 that you don't mind maybe having to put through in the wash, because there will be some color.
Definitely. We have different colors. We'll have Indian music. We'll have, I think there's a calf's person who's doing face painting or something. So we could have all that. Hopefully the weather is good and we'll do all this outside. Otherwise,
you'll have to go with plan B. That is the launch of the Social Inclusion Week, and it's the Festival of Colour. That's on Green on Theatre Letterkenny from 1:30 p.m. I think a lovely way to spend your Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely.
Before that at 9:30, there's stuff going on all over the place. There's a free 5K fun run, a walk and a jog. That's at the Vestry at St Connell's Hospital. Now, in Pettigo, they've got the launch of the Pettigo Community Orchard. That's at 2 p.m. So it's all over Donegal.
Yeah.
It's not
it's
just based
over.
In Letterkenny. Yeah. And I suggest people interested get a hold of this brochure or go on to the website. Because then on Sunday, Let Play Family Event, Donegal Sports Partnership are the lead partner. It's at the Burnham McGlinchey Town Park. It's a free family play day in the park. So that's on Sunday. And on it goes. We would be here all day if we went through every other item. But anything in particular, Sharmila, you want to mention or pick out?
On the 1st of April, we are going to have a diversity show. That's at 3 o'clock in the Greenland Theatre. And again, it's a free event. Encourage everybody to come. We have people from Afghanistan, Turkey, I think Philippines. We have 4 Indian performances, 3 different dances. One will be a solo singer with he's going to play an instrument as well. So it'll be really nice, colorful, and it'll be an amazing show of talents from people from different parts of the world.
Yeah, and I think it's a real opportunity, a lot of these events. Before that, between 12 and 4 in Ashton Kilcar, there is, again, this is some way from Letterkenny, but just to highlight the fact that things are happening all over the place. There's a cultural awareness celebration, perhaps something a whole family could go to as
definitely.
Well.
Definitely, and it's a free event.
Yeah, okay. And as I say, there's stuff happening everywhere.
Yeah, throughout the week, and hopefully they'll get hold of this brochure somewhere. I'd like to thank Christina, you know, she's the one who brought me on from the Donegal County Council. She's the one who is working with us to do this. And I think it's going to be a brilliant week. And I think 25th and 1st, I would definitely recommend people to come.
Yeah, and it's a great opportunity too for people to get their nice clothes out, to get their instruments out, to a chance to perform, be it through song or poems as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Well, Sharmila, enjoy the week. Hopefully
thank
the weather
so
plays ball with us and doesn't. But as you say, we always have to have a plan B, don't we?
Yeah.
And there is a plan B. So is there any food or drink or anything in Letterkenny on Saturday?
We might.
Any sample dishes?
Yes, we might have some sample dishes, yes. Because when you mention India, it's all about food and vibrancy, colourful clothes. Yes. So
And as well as that too, and again, sometimes, you know, there are so many different foods within India.
Absolutely.
North,
within
south,
few miles.
East, west, different spices, different textures, different flavors, different meats.
Yeah.
It's the diversity
few, like
is
we
enormous.
Say, every few miles, the food and the water changes.
Yep.
Like, you know, with the same ingredients, they make different
the
stuff.
The basics. But,
so, it's amazing. So we'll try our best.
Okay, Sharmila, it's been lovely having you on. Hopefully
thank
we
you so
see
much.
You again. That's Sharmila Kamat, who's part of the Indian community here in Letterkenny and was previewing Social Inclusion Week 2023. Runs from Saturday, the 25th of March. The event that Sharmila is particularly interested in, of course, is the Festival of Colour event in Letterkenny at On Green On this Saturday at 1:30 p.m. And also then there's the diversity showcase Saturday, the 1st of April at 3 p.m.
Yeah. So I just have one mantra to say before I go. It's called Vasudeva Kutumbakam, which means that the world is one family. Okay, that's what we believe in and that's what we want for the whole globe.
And on that positive note, we'll take a break.
Thank you,
Sharmila.
So
the recent bad weather, we've seen record tides, and I think wind and other factors played played its part. We've seen some flooding at the car park in Donegal Town. We know of the flooding close to the Polestar roundabout. And also up in Buncrana, Lawrence Hegarty is the groundsman for Buncrana GEA Club. He joins us now. Hi, Lawrence.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Good to have you with us. And what happened to your pitch? Did it take a soaking?
Yes, it did. I was the practice pitch. The main pitch was okay, thank God, but it was a good bit higher than the practice pitch.
Very good. And how unusual is it, Lawrence, for it to be flooded?
Well, probably 2017, the time of the bad flood, was the last time, and then probably about 2011. It was only 2 times I remembered as badly.
And you're kind of in a catch-22 because presumably if you put in a bunt there and the water still gets over it, you're left with the water on the pitch. So do you just have to work with nature on this one, or is there anything you can do to prevent it?
Yeah, you're probably 100% right. If you put up an embankment, it'd keep the water in. Whereas it was away yesterday morning at 8:30. Like, if you had an embankment, it mightn't be away yet.
Yeah, exactly.
It came through it.
Yeah, and I presume that the pitches have quite a bit of sand in them there as well. They're good draining pitches.
They're brilliant drainage. It was done by William Coyle in about 2000, in pitch dimensions, in about 2011.
So they've been well tested from the sky and from the ground as well. And in terms of, I suppose too, from your perspective, when you're looking at even something like the wind direction can determine how bad a flooding event is or not.
Definitely. Because the one was sort of pushing the water up all the time, like, and wasn't getting back out at all. I think it was the same the whole up the west coast, just reading a bit on it. Like, the tide was pushing up all estuaries and wasn't getting out anywhere.
But such is the drainage. The pitch should be usable again early next week.
We hope to be on it Monday. Like.
Not so bad at all. All right, well done.
I mean, we have 20 teams training. Like, it's a phenomenal pitch. It takes an awful lot of use, but it seems to bounce back all the time.
Brilliant. Well, now you are the groundsman, so I think you have to take a bit of credit there, Lawrence. Good man.
Sometimes. We're lucky with the clubhouse. Like, it was only about 6 inches from the clubhouse. Too,
wow.
Like, so.
Okay. And do you fear that these kind of weather events are going to become more frequent? Because we talked about the last one being 2017. I wonder when the last one before that was, for example.
Well, probably 2011, I think, was the last one we had as bad now.
So it's about every 5 or 6 years then. So, all right.
Yeah.
Listen, Lawrence, keep up the great work. Thanks for giving us the update. Appreciate it.
No bar at all.
Bye-bye, Lawrence.
Much,
take care. That's Lawrence Hegarty there, the groundsman for Bonkrana GEA Club. I wanted to mention to you that there's a Ukrainian pop-up cafe taking place at Malinhead Community Centre. It's on Friday, March 24th, runs from 12 noon to 2 p.m. You're invited to come along and sample some Ukrainian cuisine, enjoy a coffee and a selection of savoury and sweet treats. No booking is required, just turn up. That's a pop-up cafe, Malinhead Community Centre. The calf there, and it's tomorrow between 12 noon and 2 p.m. Thank you for waiting until we came off air. We do appreciate the timing there. Right, there is now quite a few comments coming in terms of the roads and what have you. And just to let you know that the Polestar roundabout needs traffic lights, believes the listener. If you're coming out the Port Road at closing time between 5 and 6, you'll be held up for ages because traffic coming from the Aldi direction controls the roundabout. As long as there's traffic from that direction, all other traffic must wait or take a risk and push out into the flow. Another caller says, hi, my daughter comes from Sligo on a Friday. She started to get a later bus home as the bus could lose an hour trying to get in and back out of Letterkenny. Her final stop is Derry, right? Another, why do roundabouts need to be planted with trees and plants? Why not? Do you need to see what's happening across it? Or maybe you do. I don't know. It's to make things look beautiful. Often they are the gateways to towns. Maybe that's the reason. The Portal Road in Lifford, says a caller, is a disgrace with broken surfaces. It's been this way for over a year. I know people who've their windscreens broken because of loose stones. That's the Portal Road in Lifford. Do you agree? Another, the back road from Stranorlar to Welchtown is in a very bad state with potholes about halfway. Also, a very bad stretch of potholes at Mill Hill, at Mill area, near to Barney Logue's Bridge, heading for the main BOF. Ballybuffet to Glenties Road. Take care, says a listener there, a fellow road user of yours. All right, okay. Now, I've just seen an image which is a shocker. It is a house and it surrounds underwater. Lauren, is this your property? Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, what happened to you?
We're on the Shore Road here, the apartment on the Shore Road, and it's the lobby that was flooded. Now, I haven't been able to get in my apartment for the last 2 days now because the lift isn't working because it was flooded as well.
And there's a lot of water in there. Is that water still in there as we speak?
The water's down now, but the water's gone down now, but I can't use the stairs, you see. I have to use the elevator.
So you're trapped?
So I've been, I'm up on my top floor. I'm trapped.
Oh, my word. And has this happened before? I don't know. How long have you been in this property?
We've been in now nearly a year. Never been a problem until recently, until the last 2 days. Now, that I know there was a high tide yesterday morning and the road was all flooded, But this morning when I got up and I looked out the window, the entrance to the door, it was all flooded, and the water was coming up through the sewers. Now, there was no water on the road, so the water can't be held reliable, like as in a tideways or anything, so it was coming up through the sewers, and there was toilet roll everywhere, it was all the sewage.
Man, that's horrendous, isn't it? And as I say,
yeah.
You, until such time as the lift is operable, you're stuck?
Yeah, I'm stuck.
And sorry, maybe you mentioned it, but just till I ask you one more time, what are you being told from the council as to what is or can be done?
The council hasn't got back to me about anything. I have sent emails, I have rang, and nobody has got back to me. They don't know what. They basically said on the phone they don't know who's going to be held responsible for this, because it's either Irish Water, and then they're saying it's something else. So...
And you're okay for supplies and stuff, Lauren? Do you need us to try and
I'm fine that way, you know, right. But like I have appointments and things.
No, I know that. I know that. It's very, very serious.
I've had to cancel.
Yeah, okay. And sewage in the lobby too, that needs cleaning up as a matter of urgency as well.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Listen, we'll make contact with the local authorities, see what they have to say. Obviously, from your perspective, the stairs aren't useful. You need the elevator to work.
I know they were here yesterday. The council men were here yesterday and they left sandbags, but they left them over in the corner. But there was, this morning, they would have been needed. Like, the sewage was coming up, so it had nothing to do. Like, the sandbags couldn't save anything.
Yeah.
My neighbour's car, it was at the entrance, and it was destroyed. It's full water damage as well. And there were sparks coming from the plugs downstairs and everything. It was just terrible.
It's scary, and you don't want this to happen again either. I mean, obviously, the sooner what's happened is cleaned up, but you don't want this to become a regular occurrence, I'm sure. So whatever needs to be done to prevent it needs to be done, Lauren.
Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, hopefully it gets sorted. As I say, we'll get on to the local authorities, see what they have to say, but thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Greg.
All right, take care, Lauren, and if you need anything, if we can offer any further assistance, please let us know. On to housing here. Ballybofey in Stranorlar has over 100 vacant houses, some needing minor renovation. A lot of those properties are owned by the same people. Why are they not taxed on these properties? Also, there's a couple of huge commercial premises in that area. And you know, you'll hear every year that Ballybofey Stranorlar has the highest level of vacant commercial property in the country, proportionate, right? I don't understand why, and I presume some of these really, really large buildings contribute to that in really ideal locations with services and what have you. Why are some of these buildings not taken over and turned into flats and apartments? Because there are some really big buildings that you could imagine would go a long way to addressing some of the housing problems. Greg, there's 30 new houses built for the council in Carn Dunne and I'm lying for over a year. I don't understand. Not familiar with them. That sounds like an awful lot of housing that's not being availed of. Another here. Greg, I'm totally fed up of landlords being made out to be villains all the time. I am a landlord. I own one house that we lived in before we bought our family home. I've rented out my house for many years. It's a very well cared for house that we maintain to a very high standard and have great pride in. The system, though, is totally against us. Our rent is much lower than the average rent. We have had some very good tenants, but we've had some very bad tenants too, who left us with the cost of repairing a lot of damage that they did. Others who failed to pay the rent and left us with a huge electricity bill. These costs were all on us. We have let our house out to tenants on HAP too, but we were tortured by the council. They did inspections and the amount of work we had to do for them was unreal. Electrical certs, burr certs, etc., and made us send in photos of really minor things, even though our house was of exceptional high standard in comparison to other rental properties. We pay our taxes every year on the rent. We are registered with the RTB, who now make us pay an annual registration fee. It's no wonder people are exiting the market. We too are strongly considering selling ours too. So this is part of the kind of argument the government makes, that they have to do something for landlords. Now, they could do one thing quickly, reduce the amount of tax that they have to pay on their rental incomes. I'm sure that would be welcomed by this listener and would help to soften some of the costs associating with rent. But these are people with a house. They are renting it. They're landlords, which for some reason has become a dirty word. And they're saying the way things are now, we're also thinking of selling up. And if they sell up, that's another house that has gone from the rental property market. Greg, someone mentioned a comment on the idea of introducing legislation to force financial institutions and corporate bodies intending to sell off their mortgage books or residential property portfolios to vulture funds to offer these properties, firstly to the tenants and following that to the local authorities before any other party can purchase their mortgages, books or portfolios. To make it clear, I did not state that ordinary individuals with a second home or holiday home should be included in that legislation. The idea would be to ensure that homeowners and tenants, and failing that, local authorities, would be offered the property at the same discounted price vulture funds receive. Vulture funds are paying between 30 to 40% of the property values and then using various means to evict tenants and homeowners. Private individuals' sale of their property should remain in the same as normal. The legislation should only apply, the proposed legislation from the listener, to financial institutions and corporate bodies selling off mortgage books or residential property portfolios. So that's the comment in full. So hopefully you feel that your view now there has been fully and well represented. A caller says, did you see the AI images of Trump getting arrested? Seen them on TikTok and completely fell for it. It's frightening. I've been trying to talk about artificial intelligence on this program now for months and months and months, if not longer than that, because it's huge. It's going to change an awful lot of things. I still don't think the Department of Education is taking the threat of AI. In other words, you can go onto an AI website now. It will write you a very well-worded, punctuated, grammatically correct essay. Okay, and you can ask it to do it in the style of Eminem or Wordsworth, and it will do that to a very high standard. And I'd be worried about the impact that might have on education. That's an extreme example, but in other areas as well. Google now are going to be introducing AI integration into their email, their workspace, and what have you. Microsoft are already in this space as well. And also what it's capable of doing in terms of image editing, and that's what this caller is referencing. There are websites you can go to, and you can type in, I've seen it done. I'm not sure if it's an exact example of what this is talking about. You could talk about, show me an image of Donald Trump, or create an image of Donald Trump being arrested outside the White House, for an example. Now it will go and it will source different images and it will create this image. Some of them are excellent. Some of them are hit and miss, you know. But we are on the brink of great change in that regard. And there are genuine concerns now. Genuine concerns, people involved in technology, that AI is becoming such now, artificial intelligence is becoming such now, that we are closer than we ever have been to AI making decisions. You know, I'm not talking quite Terminator stuff, but in that space, we really are. So keep your ears and eyes open to it, because it's a big technological advance. Now, I imagine it's going to be the biggest technological advance of this generation, and that is the development, introduction, and who knows where, of artificial intelligence. All right, Sarah Monaghan is a consent project manager with the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Good morning to you, Sarah.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you with us. Now, we're speaking in the context of your centre in partnership with the Department of Justice and Community Foundation Ireland, introducing the country's first ever national consent campaign. What is the aim of this campaign?
Yeah, so yesterday we launched We Consent, which is a new national long-term campaign, and its aim is to inform and educate and engage with all members of society about consent. So in our recent research, we learned that 70% of people in Ireland believe that we have a problem with consent. Additionally, one in three people told us that they were just too embarrassed to talk about sex at all. So we are here to support people to learn more about consent and understand it a little bit better, so that we're all feel better equipped to open up those really important conversations with people in our lives.
And this is not a criticism, it's just a question, as I was just reading through this yesterday. The hashtag or the actual campaign is called We Consent. Would that not have been better as Do We Consent? ? So as that the actual campaign itself poses a question and starts a conversation, rather than a presumed position, which as many people will read it as. It seems counterintuitive to me.
So what was really interesting when we were developing this campaign, and we worked, you know, across a huge amount of different audiences. We have a broad advisory group for the campaign, as well as several survivor groups feeding in on it, members of the general public as well through focus groups. And what everybody unanimously was very interested in was a shift from a kind of the older model of consent, which is very much a give and get, and it's about one person being the pursuer and asking the question, and the other person kind of acting more as the gatekeeper of consent and giving an answer. And what people really wanted to see was actually consent being based as equal parties reaching an agreement, and so that it is not one person seeking permission from the other and permission being granted, mm-hmm. but rather it is a continual equal back and forth between both parties. And in particular, actually, men were very supportive of that kind of idea, of this idea of that we consent together. It's something that we do together rather than something that you get off another person, because often, you know, we would see men taking on that role because we've, I suppose, been kind of taught that way culturally, that men are in the role of pursuer and it's their job to initiate and to be asking the question, and that women play a much more passive role. And it seemed through all of our conversations that people are ready to move on from that.
What does that mean then? What does that look like? That are you saying guys take a step back, or women are more assertive in broaching the issue? Like, what does the alternative look like?
Yeah, so I think that is very much down to every individual relationship and the framework and the dynamic that exists there, or any individual encounter even, and that. What we are saying is that consent has to be to the forefront of that framework. Everyone will know themselves best how they operate with their partner. You know, that is not, we're not going to be, you know, coming to people's houses to monitor that, but rather we want to increase understanding for people that it is a continual checking in, and that checking in might be verbal, it might be nonverbal, you know, it might be about body language, but it is keeping to the forefront at all times that you are ensuring in one way or another that the other party is comfortable, is happy, is engaging in a enthusiastic way that feels safe, and that's always to the forefront of your mind, so that you're always thinking about the other person that you're with, and you're communicating openly and frequently and honestly about what you like and what you don't like, and that these conversations should be taking place before sex, you know, during sex, after sex, that there's much more conversation happening about what you want to do, what you don't want to do, what you like, you know, and that everybody then has much more to work with, that it's not as much as of a puzzle, which it is a bit now, where we just don't talk about it and you're often a little bit in the dark as to what your partner might want.
84% of participants in the survey stated that there's a need for age-appropriate sex education in schools. Do you think that cohort, the majority, overwhelming majority, need to be more vocal, need to speak out? Because we're hearing, for the most part, I think, from the 16%, or even maybe a smaller percentage of that 16 who are, are very hard in their line and are very vocal in their opinion.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from any of the parents that we deal with, and we have a lot of interaction with parents, they want the age-appropriate education brought in for their children. But we do respect this with the right of individual parents on that. And it isn't only about what happens in the classroom, and that's very much what we're thinking with this campaign. This is about cultural education as well, in addition to that traditional education. It's about what happens when children go home, when, you know, how consent is talked about in that age appropriate way, how they talk about boundaries, how they talk about bodies, so that kids all the way up have some understanding. I mean, it can be as simple as, you know, at our launch event yesterday, we talked about teaching children that if everyone isn't enjoying the game, then maybe we should play a different game. You know, that it's just instilling in children this understanding of looking out for each other and being kind to each other. And what we haven't had, I suppose, in addition to not having a huge amount in the traditional education system, we really haven't had a lot in the cultural education way of having generations talking more about this.
A lot of people will try and frame, will frame sex education, and it's their view, by the way. I'm not saying they're, but that it's like almost educating children what to do. It's green lighting them what they want to do. My concern, though, is that I think children need to know if they're being exploited. They need to know what's happening in a certain situation. Now, you could have a, and I'm not talking about necessarily very young children, but you could have a 13-year-old girl or boy who finds themselves in a situation whereby sexual activity is expected. They might come from something of a sheltered background, and they may not have the knowledge actually to consent in the negative. In other words, to not consent, sorry, is really what I'm trying to say. That's where I see the role of education, protecting children to know that what's right and what's wrong with someone around them, whether, you know, if an adult that's not their mum or dad asks them to keep a secret, stuff like that there, that I see if it's done right, that is protecting children and young people. Now, I know this, all of this information is not based on children, by the way, and I'm just honing in on that for a moment, but that's what I see the role of education as, protecting children if it's done correctly. But that can only be done with plenty of consultation with parents, I think.
Yeah, and you know, we've launched a new website as part of the campaign, and it's at we-consent.ie, and we have a huge amount of resources on there for different cohorts, and one of the biggest sections is for parents about how to talk about consent and about boundaries, and as you say, to give both parents and children language so that if anything, which should not be happening, is happening, that they know how to articulate it. They've had a conversation already with their parents about it. They know they can go to their parents or to someone else, a trusted person, to tell them about it. And all of that, again, it just comes back to more communication, more openness, so that it isn't felt by a child or a young person of any kind as a taboo that they just shouldn't mention, shouldn't tell anyone, that they know they can talk about this and they have some language to do so. So we have a lot of resources there, so to support parents to have that conversation.
And I think that's useful too, because one thing that's not discussed too much either, really, is that people now are waiting quite late in life to have their first child. And you know, then you can be, you know, it's quite normal to be well into your 40s as a child hits 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, you know what I mean? And things were very, very different in the 80s or the late 70s or the early 90s. Like really, really difficult. And, you know, we replaced really quite common words now with replacement words in the homes that we were reared in. Do you know what I mean? So it is tough to be a parent when you're from two or three generations ago and you have to try and guide your child through a very, very different world.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with you there. And I suppose it's why we are targeting this campaign at absolutely everybody, because we all have a role to play. So like that, it could be that you are a parent from a different generation. You now nearly need to learn a whole new, you know, vocabulary. You need to learn an ability to talk about this when it is something that feels so embarrassing and so shame-filled and there was so much silence about previously. Or you may be, you know, an aunt or an uncle, or you may be, you know, talking to your friends, you may be talking to your colleagues, you may be talking to your own partner. Really, no matter who you are, this is relevant for you, either as someone who has a direct role to play in the sexual interactions and relationships that they're having, or a more indirect role. And we all have always an indirect role to play in terms of the way we talk about sex and consent and relationships, the way we maybe make jokes or post in WhatsApp groups or make comments about other people, make comments about cases in the media, because all of that is what shapes the world and the community around us. So even if people feel, oh, this isn't really for me, you know, I've been married for a long time, so I would say we all have something to learn. You know, learning isn't something that stops at any stage. We all need to learn for all our whole lives.
There's a couple of things here, a couple of interesting points from this can also be consent is quite complex, because if you consent to protected sex and then learn afterwards it was unprotected sex, that's not consent.
No, that is not consent.
Do you know what I mean?
And in fact, that is a crime. Yeah.
So I mean that, and another says, and this is as it relates to mature relationships. I've seen it happen with my friend. She thought sex was to show love and didn't want to be a bad girlfriend. So she, well, what the thrust of it is she was consenting, but wasn't consenting because she wanted to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes sense. And it is something I think that is quite common and quite unspoken and is often not talked about openly, that because we have had so little conversation and so little, you know, openness and education about this, it is highly variable what you might have normalized for yourself and your own interactions and your own relationships. And we certainly find that people minimize and excuse and find ways to put up with things, to live with things, when really they know that it doesn't actually feel right. And
I suppose onto that, if we have a broader conversation about consent, then maybe that person's partner would be more understanding that the person they're with might be doing something that they don't feel like doing just then, but they feel that they have to, you know, and that's why, and I presume that's why it's about we all must consent. Okay, Sarah, listen, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. We are continuing our coverage of the freezing of a number of school projects. Our focus yesterday was the Gael Scoil, the Caithre Maestra, of course. Just for those who don't know, the school was opened 24 odd years ago, 5 or 6 prefab students have been in them since day dot. Great progress had been made in the last little while in terms of providing a new school building. It was ready to go, contractor ready to go and all of that, waiting on a letter of commencement. But it appears that this could be one of those projects that's held up because of Department of Education spending and what have you. But this one doesn't really, is not in the same grouping as a lot of the other ones, and the tender expires very shortly. Deirdre O'Gar is a member of the Parents Association. Deirdre, thanks for rejoining us. Yes, we're out in a peaceful protest this morning at 10 a.m. Well attended, I'm sure, lots of people tooting the horn. Who could not back this campaign?
Yeah, that's correct. Greg, we got a great response here this morning. We're back now again at the school for 12 o'clock, just for another hour or so. We have RTE here with us at the minute. And we've had a lot of radio stations get in contact with us. We have News Talk, we have yourselves, Ocean FM, Radio Miguel Tuchta. So it's great to get the coverage.
Yeah, for sure.
But unfortunately, we have had no word from Norma. Now, we have done our best. We have contacted her in every way that you could imagine. We have sent emails, we have sent tweets on her Facebook account, on her Instagram account. Now, unfortunately, she has started deleting our comments that we have put up last night on our Instagram account. So I don't know what's going on there.
And just to be clear, these are very polite comments that are highlighting a desperate situation here. She's not deleting abuse, she's deleting comments where people are saying, please, listen to what we're saying. This doesn't make sense. This could put this project back at least 8 months, and we need this school now. We've been waiting for an awful long time. And that's really the importance of people banding together and campaigning, because the media eventually can't ignore it any longer. And I'm delighted they're all turning up today. So no word in the positive or the negative. It's a radio silence from the Department of Education.
Yes, that is correct. Now, we have issued invites to her to come to the school while she is in Donegal next week. So we are just hoping she will accept it. Now, obviously our time will be up at that stage. So we are hoping maybe before tonight we might get some correspondence from her.
Yeah, and I think with all respect to a lot of the other projects, some are going to be in a similar situation, but I think it's a particularly unique situation in terms of readiness and timing with this Gael Scoil.
Yes, that is correct. And like, bearing in mind, we don't have a building. Our prefabs are 24 years on site here, but they were secondhand when we got them. So like, they are getting pretty rough. Like, there's one in particular, there's a hole in the floor. Some of the windows doesn't close on it, you know, so we really do need this, and we need it now, not later.
Right. I don't know. I hope something good's going to happen today. I really do, Deirdre. Maybe common sense will prevail. Right, you're out already. You're going to stay out 12 o'clock. Go down and support them, by the way, particularly if you're in the Donegal town area. I think particularly if there's cameras there, it will really, really help this campaign if you can spare a few moments between 12 and 1 or however it lasts. Because the more people are there, the harder it will be to ignore. Deirdre, thank you for your time.
That is great. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Thank you now.
Deirdre O'Gara. Bye-bye. Member of the Parents Association there of Gaelscoil, Nakaha Maestra. And as I say, it's good to see the other media taking note of that situation. And if they did a week ago, I think when we were talking about it here as well, and I don't mean that in any way to blow a trumpet, I don't mean it like that, but the media works for the people, not the Department of Education, not the government, not the opposition. The media works for the people, in my view. I'm not dictating to any local media. They've been great, don't get me wrong. But what I'm saying is that those are the type of things that we need to be getting behind a week out, not on the day of the imminent, because it all of a sudden becomes a sexy story then, because it's just 24 hours to save the school, do you know? Whereas if this had all happened last week, I think there'd have been a far better chance of success. But I don't know, I feel something in my water in relation to that one, and I just hope there's a positive outcome to it. Now, something must be done about Glenties to the Ardra Road, flooded before there's a serious accident. Told Council and Gardaí several times. Bring that up to Thomas Pringle's office. I know you did mention Thomas in that message, but bring it up to his office as well, I would suggest. The slab road in Burt is bad around them corners. It would wreck a car, says a caller. All right, that's where we have to leave it on the show today. It's been a busy one, a couple of subjects really dominating things, but we have to give the time over where it's necessary. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you were... Thank you, for listening to the programme, watching it, however you got involved. Thanks to Donna Marie Doherty and Anya Sweeney, who researched and produced. We're back with you tomorrow morning with the Friday panel from 9. Lots to talk about again.